here we are 23 years into 21st century learning. So those four C's of collaboration, communication, critical thinking, creativity, I contend there's a different four C's that we need to come up with. And those are...
Hey there, class kickers, and welcome back to another episode of the Kick Some Class podcast, the show designed to help you, the educator, kick some class at home, in school, and in life. And today, I have with me a friend here, Jed Stefanowicz, and he is a two-time author. He's in a tech coach and infusion role, sort of nebulous position like myself, and really interested to chat with him today. So, Jed, welcome aboard.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Good to be here. Nebulous is about putting it as kindly as it gets for folks like us, right?
It's funny. Every time somebody asks, like, what do you do? It's always like, a lot, you know, like it's just, you know, funny how that works out. So, yeah, I mean, I said that you and I kind of know what I mean by that, but you want to explain for folks what that, you know, why it kind of comes across that
way.
Yeah,
sure. The title is Digital Learning Coach. And so I taught third grade for 22 years and then moved into a role of a digital learning coach across a bunch of elementary schools. Then I switched districts to where I'm just housed in one school. So I have a home school, one staff, and each of our elementaries has a full-time digital learning coach, which is pretty awesome. Yeah, I know. So when I say that, other people in our kind of circle are like, ooh, because that's rarely the case. And truly, it's the vision which we're moving toward is a true coaching vision, an instructional coaching position. It's interesting because, of course, you're also the tech guy. And I'm the tech guy in the building. But you know, teachers that I work with know me first and foremost as an educator first. So yes, I'm helping fix problems, but I'm also looking to kind of solve problems and help them with instructional ideas and thinking about projects and thinking, rethinking maybe how they're sharing projects, saving things and showcasing learning. So that's really my passion area. And you know, that's that people who do what we do, that is our passion area. Yeah. And it's not about, you know, the tools, not about the product. It's about the practices over the products.
Man, that's so good right there. That's exactly it. And so it's funny you say that. I actually, same deal, classroom. So this was year 25 for me. Most of those years as a middle school science teacher, I came out on grant once and worked back and forth between PBL and IT. And now people seem to remember me more from IT in the elementary buildings. And so I get calls. I'm like, no, I don't do that anymore, but I'll help, you know? So you said something, showcase learning. And I know it's, you know, some people may think that's buzzword, others, you know, but I just if you could kind of maybe walk somebody through a day in the life of working with a teacher that you're saying, hey, how can we showcase learning? What might that look like from somebody that maybe isn't familiar with that?
Well, you know, it's only a buzzword for people who don't get it and don't want to do it, right? Good teachers have been showcasing learning forever. And we have, you know, new tools within reach to reach farther and showcase differently and communicate instantly to parents and community and worldwide. So when I'm talking about showcasing learning, I'm really talking about especially rethinking publishing. That's kind of my current big project is, and I can't decide if I'm, you know, calling it powering up publishing or, but it's really about thinking beyond the bulletin board, right? Yeah. And it's thinking about whatever it is that goes on that bulletin board, goes on that cardboard trifold, whatever people are really attached to, it's because they're great units, they're great projects, they're great activities that do showcase learning. And then, so my idea is instead of replacing those things, it's let's go beyond them. If you're that committed to a bulletin board, let's get a QR code on the bulletin board that explains the process. I would have been that kid who was finished with the activity in 10 minutes. And if someone gave me an iPad and said, you know, film what the rest of the class is doing or make a tutorial that shows this art technique that's on the bulletin board, that would have been me. And we've got the tools to do it. We've got the tools, you know, so that kids are content creators. And yes, we're content creators, but what we're doing is modeling for kids how to do that. So showcasing learning, you know, we've always been about collecting performance tasks, right? And outside the classroom, so beyond just classroom teachers, you know, specialists in the building, how do we get to see what they're doing? And then within the classroom, how are we really capturing those things? And the more we can kind of differentiate or give options, especially, you can accomplish two things. I think you can really reach voices and promote voices that we're not getting. Really, it's about, you know, every student's voice. And I swear, I mean, I know you've seen it. If you get a podcast going, if you give kids an audience, you're going to hear voices that you're not hearing through a worksheet. And then the other thing is, you know, it's exactly that. I guess I could only think of the one thing. I forgot the other. But when it comes back to me.
Yeah, no, that's fine. You said, and this is funny because some teachers find this world of maybe differentiated instruction, maybe lesson extension, maybe content creation difficult because you said it and the teacher handed me an iPad. And I think that ownership piece is sometimes a struggle. Like you were probably the same way, always a bleeding edge. I say bleeding edge, not cutting edge, you know, kind of person willing to try things out, even if it failed and fail through it, fail forward and figure it out. But a lot of teachers don't have that comfort zone, and that's fine. But to hand it off to a kid, say, just because I'm not comfortable doesn't mean we're not going to do it, and let those kids fail or let those kids try and see, like, you might find, I mean, I say this more often now, kids don't need us in some of these realms. Like, we used to think, oh, we got to get it perfect, can't let the kids goof up. Now it's like, goof up. I'm the one that's going to goof up. Let's let them have it, you know?
Right. I mean, that's exactly it. I've got a theory on failure, which is that failing isn't failure until they give up or we start doing their thinking for them. Ugh. And allowing that struggle, allowing that, and yes, they should be doing stuff that, and yet you're right. Most of the classroom teachers aren't quite at that edge. So it is difficult. Like you said, the bleeding edge folks, it's difficult to give those options. It's difficult to try something that you're not a content expert on,
right?
Whether it's Hour of Code, whether it's a new initiative that comes in. It's difficult because you have to give a lot of options. You have to know what you're doing. You're relinquishing a lot of control of your class. And absolutely, that's a vulnerable thing for, you know, new teachers, veteran teachers. And, you know, I think new teachers get an unfair knock that they should be expected to be really experienced or highly skilled teachers because they're, you know,
they're younger, quote,
digital natives, right?
Yeah.
And then veteran teachers get an unfair knock because, you know, people think they're afraid to try new things. And when you can partner those things together or encourage either of them to try, but then communicate about what they find, that's kind of the sweet spot too.
Right. Yeah. I think it's funny you say that as a veteran teacher. You know, I'm 24 for the second time. And it's weird for kids to think like, oh, I got this. And then to have me show them, they're like, what? I didn't know. Yeah. Just because I'm, you know, experienced, we'll say that, that it doesn't mean it's, so that's kind of a funny way of putting it. Yeah. I'm looking at your book titles here and Take Aim at Digital Learning. Just want to talk about that for a little bit and where that book came from and what your goal was with that first
love
book.
It. Sure. That goal, so I'd written a blog for years, which I encourage anyone to write a blog. I swear, if you can write a tweet, you can write a blog. And I think if you can write a blog, you can write a book. But it really was just a collection of all these ideas. So it's Take Aim at Digital Learning. And the AIM stands for Activate, Innovate, Motivate. That's what we do, whether we're tech integration specialists, innovation coach, digital learning coach, or just a skilled teacher. Right. I mean, any skilled teacher is finding ways to activate, innovate, and motivate instruction. Sometimes it's with technology, but it doesn't have to be. So that book is a collection of strategies, techniques, and, you know, if somebody wanted 1,001 ideas to try tomorrow, there's those lists of tools in there.
Yeah.
But it's really more of a discussion. It's really more of philosophical why, how, and then ideas of, you know, how are you activating instruction and what are the tools to do it? And when you're innovating, what are you really doing? What are you letting go of? What are you adding? So it's really the best compliment I got was from a person kind of in a role like ours who said, you just wrote a manual for how to do our job. And that was a huge compliment to me. And it wasn't meant to be that way, but the audience is truly classroom teachers, digital learning folks, administrators, because it's really unpacking and rebuilding some of the structures that we're doing in classrooms, whether it's assessment, whether it's techniques and tools and instruction. Yeah. So yeah, that's what Take Aim at Digital Learning was all
about.
Love
that. Activate, innovate, motivate. And it's funny because the activate, my brain goes to engagement. And I, I mean, of course, there's a little bit of motivation in there. And this is, you know, if I had anything secretly tattooed on me based on my job, it would be until you have engagement, you have nothing. And, you know, we're going through all of these activities or curriculum or whatever it is in our lesson plan. But are the kids with us, right? Have we activated that learning? And, you know, I think back to like, oh, do you have an anticipatory set? And I'm like, man, who cares what you call it? Is there a way to, as you're saying, activate, you know? So that's,
are
that's
you
good.
Creating that? Are you creating that spark? Are you creating that moment? I mean, when you were in third grade, the things you remember from third grade are the moments and the experiences,
yeah.
Not the units, not the objectives, not the bell ringers, not the, you know, the dipsticks and the exit tickets. What you remembered were the moments. And that book is full of creating those moments. And when you think about the ones as a student or as a teacher that are the ones that are engagement, like you said, that's the key to everything. Yep. It's when these three things intersect, when they're meaningful, when they're memorable, and when they're measurable. Those are the ones that as a teacher, you wish, oh, I wish I got observed. That would have been a great observation. Or you write yourself a note saying next year, stretch this into, you know, 2 days or something like that. Because, you know, it's meaningful for the educator. It's meaningful for the kids in the room. And you know, you created those moments. So it's those sparks, those moments that are really what that book is all about.
Yeah, man, it's so true. Like I even just in the last year, I started reading more about, you know, neuroscience and forget if it's Made to Stick or Make It Stick. I read both those books and I can't remember which one it is, but that novelty, you know, you mentioned it. What do I remember from third grade? What do I remember from my childhood is travel, is family vacations, because, you know, my father was an IBM guy and then he had all the, you know, we built houses and he was a logger. It was like, we worked as kids, but those times when we drove cross country, you know, I had been to every state but five before I got out of elementary school. And I was proud of that, you know, and the Pueblo cliff dwellings were boring, but I took pride that we were there together. And I think it's that it was like every one of those trips was we're at a new place, but we're all together. So it was memorable. You know, you mentioned those three M's, right? Like, that novelty sticks in our brain. So, you know, I'll have kids that are like 30 some years old now. I'm trying to do the math. 37 would be my oldest students. And they'll say, I still remember that day you taught in rollerblades. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that ever again.
You could very easily have grand students out there, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's crazy. You know, like it's just, and I was just, I didn't want to be bored myself. And you don't realize that, man, that memorable piece is right on. So
and you know what's really interesting? I'll just cut you off for one second.
Go because for it.
When you were in third grade, when you were traveling, that was completely separate from school. And it shouldn't be now. This many years later, those experiences out of school, we should be making those connections. Kids should be bringing that love in and talking about it. I mean, just think of what it would be like now if you knew a kid was taking those travels and you knew they were coming back, the tools we could give them, or that the ways they could archive that trip, or the travel journals they could make, or they could be podcasting on the road, or they could be, you know, of course, remote, you know, they could remote in from anywhere. That's like, it's amazing how coming back together in person in some ways was no less remote than the intimacy really good teachers found during remote teaching. And there were some special connections there that got lost when we came back.
You know, it's funny, you're getting ahead of me and I'm okay with that, which is, you know, to think about, I talked about this with Carl Hooker. He said, not back to normal, forward to different. It was his phrase. And I, when I came out, I'm like, I don't want to go back. If that was normal sucked. Mm-hmm. And I think people knew it, but I think coming out of it, we all realized that we could be looking for something better and there's an opportunity here. So I'll jump into that question now is, it's one of my normal, one of my ending questions is, what do you, when you look at the landscape and education and the tools and all of the things that we're either facing as struggles or challenges or good things, where do you think we need to go or where do you see this going that could be a good thing down the line?
Sure. It's interesting. You know, it was courageous people who said before the pandemic that normal sucked. And it was people who were, you were an outlier if you said so, and you were kind of a rebel. And then the pandemic came along and then everyone felt like they sucked at their job. And the fact is, most of us did. There was just no way around it. And yet we came back, and the things that we either knew we should have changed beforehand or knew we should have changed when we came back, how many of those bad habits came back, and how many, and it's, and I, you know, I don't fault teachers for it, because that first year back was really about rebuilding community, rebuilding. But here we are 23 years into 21st century learning. So those four C's of, you know, collaboration, communication, critical thinking, creativity, I contend there's a different four C's that we need to come up with. And those are connection, compassion, culture, climate. Those got to be in, they have to be in place before 100%. Any teacher is going to relinquish those ideas to build spaghetti towers, or they're just going to be one-off spaghetti towers. And those STEM challenges or innovation lessons are going to be, you know, kind of empty transactions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Just, so I'm not full-time in the classroom, two classes every other day, and I co-teach them. So my co-teacher is a newer guy. I'm like, you got all the normal teacher duties. So he's standing out in the hallway in middle school. And I just thought, man, I'm just going to walk around and I'm going to greet every kid or everyone I could get to. And I made it through like four kids. Hey, how's it going? Just make eye contact. Just being as normal as you can be with a middle schooler. And I had made it maybe a quarter of the way around the room, and I had like a little entourage that was following me. And I thought, these kids are hungering to be seen, engaged, and validated respectfully. And I'll throw that in as well, by an adult, you know. And it was like, and I think because of that, we don't have behavior problems. We don't have, just, in fact, I think kids are coming to school just to come to this class because there's no grades. You know, we're doing, you know, 3D printing, we're building 3D puzzles and Tinkercad, like any craziness that I want to throw at them, they're game for. And half the time they're taking it further, you know? So I, yeah,
well, think about the independence and think about the skills that students needed to acquire on their own during the pandemic. And then to come back and have the same expectations as beforehand it's condescending. It's borderline insulting.
Yeah.
But for so many kids, you know, for so many kids, it's necessary. And for so many teachers, it's what they know. And unless, you know, it's the brave ones who are willing to back it up and say, hang on, it doesn't have to be this way. And, and you're doing it, you know, you're one of those, what I call either risk taker, rule breaker, or a change maker. And that's what my second book was all about.
Yeah. So that's the man. Awesome. Gary, lead me right in there. So it's impact to influence, and it's a really interesting format. So, I say that because you wrote the book with interviews and sharing stories of others. And I love that as obviously your connection. For those of you listening and don't know about Codebreaker, EDU, and X Factor, go out and search those out. But that's how Jed and I connected. And so that, you know, that spirit, that community piece is part of everything that they do. And so, you know, it's no wonder how you fit in with that. But you want to just go ahead and talk about how those 30 or 31 stories.
20 stories. So that's okay. You're working on my sequel. That's
perfect. That's right. Yeah.
It was an idea. You know, there's so many good podcasts out there like this one. The world does not need me to create a podcast. So I didn't want to do that. But what I wanted to do, I wanted to connect with 20 people whom I admire, 20 people who have been classroom teachers, and it's called impact to influence. And how did they manage to take that impacting 20 or 22 kids at a time to influencing a school, local policy, up to national policy? There's three teachers, state teachers of the year, a national teacher of the year, podcasters, different publishers. I mean, Peter and Paul Reynolds are in there, just really unique people, a bunch of people that I met through Teach Plus, where I was a fellow last year. But what I did, you mentioned the format of the book, was I kind of wanted to learn their stories selfishly, because I think they all have something unique to teach, which is you don't have to follow the admin lane. You don't have to follow, you know, you can invent your lane. And one thing that I really found interesting was in all these stories, there was someone who kind of encouraged them to try something, take something, either said, you'd be a great principal, you'd be a great assistant principal, you should think about, are you really good at connecting, you should think about this role. There's always kind of that mystical person along the way that just kind of encouraged them at a time when they needed it. Yeah. But the format of the book is let's say, you know, you read 5 pages about Brian, and then on the next page, there's a QR code. And the QR code goes to a 20-minute Zoom interview like this between me and that person. So it's kind of like a podcast, but it's embedded in the book. And, you know, it got them to tell their stories in their words and kind of, interestingly, some of them, you could tell they're used to telling their story. And I was like, tell me why. What is it about you? Not what have you done, but what is it about you that when there was a challenge, you stuck with it? Or when, you know, your teachers down the hall rolled their eyes, you stayed in the classroom. How did you manage to take that impact, grow its influence, and then where are you going next? So it was a really cool way of both collecting and connecting these really inspirational leaders. So it's called Impact Influence.
Man, and it's funny because I had no desire to be an administrator, but definitely felt a call to take that influence, right? And to take a step up and to forget about if people think I'm crazy, you know, just to get the voice out there. And so I'm going to turn this around. Who was that person for you, or what was that push, that inspiration that somebody looked and saw that next level in you when maybe you either didn't see it or hadn't acted on it?
That's really funny. I have not been asked that question before. This book was not about me. The first book, Take Aim, was about me, and it was about my dumping my head. This book was about all those other stories. You know what I think it was? It was after teaching in third grade and doing the same thing repeatedly, and then beginning to stretch it. It caught the eye of just some administrators. And there was a principal, Kirk Downing, who went up to assistant super and then superintendent, who encouraged me to kind of find, not just answer that call, because it's interesting you say that call, but figure out what that call was. Right. And, you know, he said to me at one point, you don't let anyone put you in an office. Don't let anyone take you in out of a school, because you belong in classrooms every day and people need to see what you're doing and people need to be able to learn from you. And you can't get a bigger compliment from that. And I realized, you know, I've never found a principal who's made me want to be a principal. And, you know, I'd never wanted to, like you said, they've never proven to me why I'd want that job. But I do know that there's a certain call. And that was the other thing that I found most common in all the people I interviewed was that call. And it took a lot of times, and sometimes those hits and misses, for folks to figure out, you know, someone we know in that group we meet on Fridays, you know, went into admin and realized, nope, that's not for me, and then shifted. And you kind of finding that lane, but that takes courage and it takes flexibility and adaptation. So, you know, for me, I love doing what I'm doing. I love connecting with teachers. Of course, I miss, just like I'm sure you do, having your own class, but I'm in classrooms every day. So that's the best thing. I mean, I get to be in classrooms doing what I love to do, and hopefully connecting with teachers to help them do what they want to be able to do. And that's really the crux of coaching for me. Isn't about teaching someone an idea that I have. It's about helping them realize an idea that they have.
Yeah. And man, that's really good, because I found that balance, you know, like there are some teachers that still want you to come in and maybe do something like that. Maybe they front loaded something and they want you to come in and do something. Because I have all the, you know, all the crazy things that have been purchased by grants. So I have VR and, you know, like, and I'm sure you probably have some of those same tools. And, you know, it's like, that's fine for me. I like that because I'm a showman. I'm a goofball, you know, and so I like to come in and bring the fun and engaging show. And then every kid is happy I'm there. And then I blow out of there with no other responsibility like that. That's great. But then the balance to that is, when you can say to a teacher who's reluctant, what are you doing right now? Or this is my pitch in middle school. What lesson have you been doing for years that sucks? It still sucks. And the chances of me making it worse are pretty low. Because let's just put it out there, right? Like some of them are like, yeah, I don't know if I want that guy in my room. And so, but it's when you can serve and then they can see it, then it becomes that maybe you go from the lead to the co-teach to the coach. That's kind of the model I've been working on. I don't know if you've had that same experience. Sometimes you got to do it the first time so they see it.
Well, that what you just described is exactly what I think the past couple of years has been like for me, because it's not necessarily easier, but it's certainly fun to walk into a room to applause. And when you're rolling the cart full of robots or drones or whatever, kids are thrilled to see you, get them wound up. And just like that wild uncle, you leave. And then,
that's right.
You know, but before you do, the teacher says, all right, come back next October and do this again. And then that's really a one-off, like, empty transaction. And yeah. How are you, you know, it's like sticking to those ABCs, always building the capacity. How are you building that educator's capacity? And the fact is, a lot of times you're not. You're making those incredible experiences for kids. But if you're not leaving that teacher equipped to take the reins over, if you drop dead, then, you know, you've kept it in your realm. So yeah. That exact process you talked about of starting with that, flipping it and really saying, what's an idea? And I was guilty of it. I taught the same, you pulled the same folder out 20 years yeah. in a row. And that's the connection. It's what are you so, and this goes back to what I was saying very at the very beginning, like, what are the activities that you absolutely love? What are those kind of core activities you look forward to every year? And that's where the connection is made. And that's when you're really building trust, and you're building, that's when the teacher in the room recognizes that you are there to support their instruction, build their skill set, not to come in and, you know, ostensibly co-teach something. So you really hit the nail on the head. And that's a really hard thing to teach unless you just kind of discover it for yourself.
Yeah. And then it's still not easy to do. Cause I'm still like, so I don't know how long you've been in this role. I came out, I was hired within district, obviously, in the summer of, a year and a half ago, but they couldn't find a replacement. So I didn't come out until end of November. So I'm only 14, 15 months, you know, into it. And I'm, that transition's been hard, you know, to get that into, okay, you know, how do we do this so that by the end of even the one class, you can start to take over and then to run, like, I'm running professional development with Lego robots so that, hey, you can grab these kits anytime you need. This is how you charge them. This is the stuff for the Chromebook. I'm going to give you a, you know, Google slideshow, that kind of thing. And if you want, I'll be there, but you're leading this time, you know, so it's not easy to do.
No, so, it isn't. And, you know, from like a force field perspective, there's forces that work toward it, forces that work against it. And sometimes being a known quantity in a building where you're switching roles is both of those. It's a force working for you, but it's also against you because you're a known quantity. And yeah. To suddenly say, you know, I'm available to you, that isn't going to do it. There has to be a certain proof process, I think, in there too.
Yeah, right on. So I'm coming kind of to the questions. I only have two of them left now, but thinking back through the, you know, your first year, I don't know what your experience was coming out of college, you know, ready to teach, but I definitely felt in that first year that I wasn't exactly prepared for the job I was about to step into. So, you know, if you could think back there, what's something you would think, hey, maybe college prep or the school or somebody could have done a better job getting me ready for this?
Yeah, it happened. It's funny. No one's asked me that story either, but it happened about 10 seconds into my very first day of teaching. The school I was hired at was being renovated. So they had been at a high school for a year. And then this was like a leftover month before it was finished. So I was hired starting at a high school. I'm like, what is going on? We're in this wing of the high school. And the bell rang and it was like an old school high school bell. I'm like, uh-oh. All right, bell rang. I'm dressed in my tie. Everyone's seated, ready to roll. The room's decorated perfectly. And one kid threw up and one kid ran away. And this was third grade. I'm like, all right. I thought I was completely prepared. And I realized that all the preparation that I thought I knew was like such a sliver of the job. And I do tell that story sometimes to like student teachers because all the things you think you need to have ready, that's a very small piece of it. It's, you know, it's when the bee flies in the room, it's when you have to just surrender and you have to be flexible. So I don't think those things, I don't know if they're just not taught, if they can't be taught, if they have to be experienced. But being prepared to be unprepared, being prepared to be flexible and adaptable. And that is at the heart of innovation too, is recognizing, you know, the expert teachers around you. Part of being a new teacher is recognizing who you want to be and who you don't want to be. And that's an interesting thing. And that's not a knock on a particular teacher, but you might realize that's not who I'm going to be. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make me a bad teacher. Doesn't say I'm lacking something, but you know, you kind of find your lane there. You find your identity as an educator, and that's your craft. That's what makes you unique. So that the shrink wrapped manual on your desk, that or whatever the new initiative arrives, there's a reason. No matter how tightly teachers adhere to that fidelity of a new program, everyone finds their own way to do it, or else it feels empty.
Yeah, you have to. So a quick follow-up on that one, because I can't not ask it. So did you tend to the vomit kid or the kid who ran away first? I gotta know that one.
There's a plastic bucket in every room, so he was easy to attend to, and then I got who I needed to get to find the kid who split. And within about a half an hour, all was right in the world, and I was ready to restart my day. But it was one of those. It was certainly a memorable day.
Oh, I can't imagine. And, you know, from my perspective, a half hour, that's whole first period then is shot, you know, but you've got to, you had time to, I don't know if it's a good thing or not to recover with those kids for that.
Nobody was missing for a half an hour. It just wasn't where he was supposed to put it. He split just needed to have the right person connect with him.
Isn't that funny? Like that's a real fear. I think sometimes when you're starting out or you have a challenging kid behavior wise or whatever, that, you know, if it's a differently abled kid who just got a need that as the office calls and I don't know what this kid is, you know, or something. That's an interesting one. So,
it speaks to the fact of the matter. You know, if you've got 20 kids, you might have one student who requires 90% of your attention, and that's just the fact. And if you can't give it, then that's not fair to that student at the time. And that's a real challenge, but it's those kind of that flexibility, that adaptability. That's the most skilled teachers that I've seen are those who can do that and those who can swing. And yes, I'm going to give you that 90%, but only for a very condensed amount of time. And that's the heart of differentiation too, and really just meeting those differently abled students.
Yeah. And you may have actually answered this question, but if you want to add to it, which is the flip side of it. So now here you are maybe seeing the sun coming down on the formal part of your career. I'm sure you've got plans for after that. I know I do, as far as like, I may retire, but I'm not done, you know, I'm just going to have more control over it. But, so a new student comes in, or a new teacher comes in, and they're in year one, and, wet behind the ears. What's your number one go-to piece of advice for them?
That's a really tough, but a really good question. My advice is to learn from the people around you. Be very open about asking. Don't pretend to know what you're doing. And realize that you're surrounded by people who know how to do what they're doing at an expert level. And if you don't connect and you don't take advantage of that, I think it's a missed opportunity. And, there are very few professions that people are so self-conscious. And so they close their doors, they do their job, they decorate their rooms perfectly, they feel like they have an awesome lesson, but who knows, you know, who's seeing it, and how are you delivering to those parents who are entrusting you with their kids for a year? And that gets to the heart of, I think, the responsibility of a teacher is, you know, you've got to take it personally. Some things you can't take personally, but the craft and the job and the responsibility you have to take so personally, and you need to let parents know it. And whether it's through technology, whether it's through communication, whether it's through personal, you know, when you have conversations with parents, just so that they understand that you understand the magnitude of what this job is really all about.
Wow, that's good. And I think I could take that advice you gave and almost flip it around for some of the veteran teachers, which is this idea is going to come out in a blog post or a book of my own sooner or later, which is seasoned doesn't have to mean salty. And so some of the older teachers have taken way too much personally about the job that are the things you shouldn't, and maybe have grown cold to the students who you need to take that part of you set, I don't know if you use this word partnering, but parents are entrusting you with their child for a year. And that I keep coming back to, we are partnering with their vision for the development of their child, and to see it that way brings about that peace again. So, man, that's good stuff. So where can everybody find you? Where can they find the books, social media, all that stuff?
Sure. So the books, they're on Amazon. So Take Aim at Digital Learning and Impact Influence. They're both on Amazon. They're, I think, at Barnes & Noble too. Impact Influence, I just learned today, is available globally. So you can, if you're in Australia, our friend Brett can attest to that. You can find me easy ways on Twitter, at Stefanowicz135. And you can, I'm sure, see the spelling right here. That's me on Twitter. My website, jedpd.com. So awesome. Yeah, Stefanowicz rhymes with Bananowicz. It's all you got to know. And then hopefully some upcoming workshops. But reach out, find me, connect with me through the webpage or on Twitter. And let's collaborate. Let's hear ideas. I'd love to hear what folks think about the book. I'd love to hear feedback on those interviews, because like I said, the impact influence is really about other people's stories. And I love connecting, collecting, and then sharing them, because every one of them is a unique lane, a unique journey. And I love celebrating that.
That's so awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, Jed. And for all of you out there, you know, I normally end it with, you know, go kick some class, but I'll switch it up for Jed this time. Go activate, innovate, and motivate both yourself and your students and family. And that will help you kick some class. So I got it in anyway. So we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks, Jed.